Psychological fallacies. We've already seen that everyday life involves risk. Likewise, estimating and managing those risks is a necessary part of everyday life. Probability is the mathematics of estimating risk, and you know how I feel about math. I'm not going into a long dissertation on the subject. I am, however, going to point out some of the more common misunderstandings about probability and how we psychologically distort situations to make the odds seem more in our favor. In this section, I want to point out a few examples of the fallacies in popularly held beliefs about probability and how market participants apply the same fallacies to their market strategies and positions. Succumbing to the fallacies is harmful enough when applied to discrete events, but it is catastrophic when applied to continuous processes. Below are a few examples of the psychological fallacies most people have when it comes to risk and probability. 1. The first psychological fallacy is the tendency to overvalue wagers involving a low probability of a high gain and to undervalue wagers involving a relatively high probability of low gain. The best examples are the favorites and the long shots at racetracks. 2. The second is a tendency to interpret the probability of successive independent events as additive rather than multiplicative. In other words, people view the chance of throwing a given number on a die to be twice as large with two throws as it is with a single throw, like throwing sixes four times in a row in craps and thinking that must mean their chances of throwing a seven next have improved. 3. The third is the belief that after a run of successes, a failure is mathematically inevitable and vice versa. This is known as the Monte Carlo fallacy. A person can throw double sixes in craps 10 times in a row and not violate any laws of probability because each of the throws is independent of all others. 4. Fourth is the perception that the psychological probability of the occurrence of an event exceeds the mathematical probability if the event is favorable, and vice versa. For example, the probability of success of drawing the winning ticket in the lottery and the probability of being killed by lightning may both be 1 in 10,000. Yet from a personal viewpoint, buying the winning lottery ticket is considered much more probable than getting hit by lightning. 5. Fifth is people's tendency to overestimate the frequency of the occurrence of infrequent events and to underestimate that of comparatively frequent ones after observing a series of randomly generated events of different kinds with an interest in the frequency with which each kind of event occurs. Thus, they remember the streaks in a long series of wins and losses and tend to minimize the number of short-term runs. 6. Sixth is people's tendency to confuse the occurrence of unusual events with the occurrence of low-probability events. For example, the remarkable feature of a bridge hand of 13 spades is its apparent regularity, not its rarity. All hands are equally probable. As another example, if one holds a number close to the winning number in a lottery, he tends to feel that a terrible bad stroke of misfortune has caused him just to miss the prize. Some examples. Independent events. A dealing shoe in baccarat doesn't know anything about what cards have already been dealt. Cards coming out of a deck are statistically independent events. In fact, one might argue that according to the law of large numbers, each side has a 50-50 probability of winning, and one should bet against the run in baccarat. Nevertheless, people bet in baccarat on the premise that the random events of drawing cards from a dealing shoe are somehow related to one another and will tend to create a string of runs. Risk, exposure, and probability. The definition of risk is to expose to the chance or possibility of loss. Most people erroneously try to assign a numerical value to that chance, which simply confuses risk with probability. In the markets, we are talking about unique, non-repeatable events, so we can't assign a frequency probability to their occurrence. In statistical terminology, such events are categorized under case probability, not class probability. This means the probability of market events is not open to any kind of numerical evaluation. All you can actually determine is the amount of your exposure as opposed to the probability that the market will or will not go to a certain price. Therefore, all you can do is manage your exposure and losses, not predict profits. Money odds versus probability odds. Perhaps the most common fallacy to which market participants are susceptible is money odds versus probability odds. Many market participants express the probability of success in terms of a risk-reward ratio. For example, if I bought my famous takeover stock, which you will hear about in the next chapter, at $26 and placed a sell stop below the market at $23 with an upside objective of $36, my risk-reward ratio would be 3 to 10. Risk $3 to make $10. It is clear that I don't understand probability. Couching my rationalizations in arithmetic terms does not automatically lend credibility to my position. The 3 to 10 ratio has nothing to do with the probability that the stock can or will get to $36. All the ratio does is compare the dollar amount of what I think I might lose to the dollar amount of what I think I might make. But it doesn't say anything about the probability of either event occurring. Some dollars are bigger than others. Why did the dollars seem so big at the blackjack table? Because I was accustomed to dealing with price ticks in the market, not tokens with $25 or $100 printed on them. Ordinarily, the use of chips is a psychological gimmick to minimize the importance of money. And it works on most people. But I was used to handling hundreds of thousands of dollars of market transactions on the simple shout of my voice, which made it seem like money wasn't actually involved. When I had to physically take two $25 chips and throw them onto the blackjack table, it felt like real money. Being down $2,000 in ticks in the market doesn't feel the same as being down $2,000 at the baccarat table. It hurt a lot in baccarat. Also, the $7,000 in baccarat winnings felt like a lot more money than $7,000 in the market. Why? In the pit, I was supposed to be working to try to make that kind of money, but in baccarat, it was like free money. That means spending the $7,000 won in the casino was a lot easier than spending money made in the markets. The night after we'd won all the money, Conrad, Broderick, and I met a broker friend of Conrad's who was trying to get some of Conrad's business. We wanted to go to the best restaurant in town. The broker swore we wouldn't be able to get a table on such short notice and without a reservation. Well, we went to the restaurant anyway, and I slipped the maitre d' $100 bills until he got us a table. It cost $600, but it was worth it to upstage the other broker. The money wasn't important because we hadn't worked for it. Those $100 bills were not nearly as big as the ones I had worked for in the pit.